BreakTheBook.com.
Hello, what's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Friday, March 3rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we wrap up this week of Bang the Book Radio. I'll be joined here in a couple seconds by Alex Nicholas of Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. We're going to chat Conference USA. One more set of regular season games coming up on Saturday. Conference tournament begins in Birmingham on Wednesday, so we'll get some thoughts from him on that upcoming conference tournament. Second half of today's show, I'll open up the Bang the Book Radio mailbag. We got a few listener questions to cover. I'll also look at some NHL situational stuff for this weekend. Hit on whatever I can, because we got a lot of time here at the end of today's show for me to talk about those types of things. One other thing I want to remind listeners of here at the beginning of the show, next week, actually the next 2 weeks, shows only on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, leaving Thursday and Friday open because conference tournaments and then March Madness. So helps to accommodate our guests, helps to accommodate our listeners as well. We'll have some extended shows on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, but no shows Thursday and Friday of the next 2 weeks. I believe we'll be okay for Sweet 16 week. I'll have to double check the NCAA tournament schedule when that comes out. But just so our listeners are aware, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday only the next 2 weeks. So with that, we'll bring on today's first and only guest. That is Alex Nicholas of Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. Alex, how's it going today, man?
It's going good, man. Just still trying to process what I witnessed last night at the Don Haskett Center. It was a wild night for UTEP and a wild night across Conference USA.
It was definitely a very interesting night for UTEP. Correct me if I'm wrong, they could have locked up the 4 seed with a win last night, right?
They actually could have locked up the 3rd seed. The Old Dominion now technically has that spot. If they win on Saturday, they solidify it, but they're in the driver's seat right now. UTEP, on the other hand, if they would have won, they would have locked it up due to their record against the top teams in the conference. So Old Dominion right now is a half game in front of UTEP. They're at UTSA tomorrow. I think they'll definitely cover that one and win that one. So, yeah, UTEP right now, basically win on Saturday, you're locked into the 4th seed. They lost the opportunity to get to that important 3rd seed and avoid Middle Tennessee to the final. Now they're in that same side of the bracket on the quarterfinals with Middle Tennessee, but they have to win on Saturday to lock that up.
Well, and that's the big thing here looking at Saturday is we have a lot of seeding things left to figure out. Middle Tennessee, the 1, Louisiana Tech, the 2, Old Dominion, the 3, UTEP and Rice still vying for 4, and 4 is very important here because we don't have to play on Wednesday.
Yeah, and the situation right now is UTEP loses and Rice wins, Rice is in, and Rice had a tremendous win last night at the buzzer, another close game that went down to the wire, and they go to Western Kentucky, who I believe Western Kentucky has one of the top collective talents, and they haven't put it together in terms of win-loss record or being not getting on the street, but that's a difficult task for Rice, and that's still a very wide open spot, that 4 spot. Charlotte's a good team that's going to come in here and challenge UTEP with their offensive prowess on Saturday. So very much in the air, and Rice and UTEP, but it's crazy that they kind of felt like Rice would be battling in this and in for that 4 spot. And last time I went on your show, I think I was pretty much just ripping UTEP apart, and now to see the Miners in that 4 spot, it feels good as a fan, but just as a sports story, it really is a tremendous turnaround for UTEP to even be in this opportunity. But definitely got to watch out for Rice. That's a potential quarterfinal matchup, UTEP or Rice, and there's going to be a lot of fireworks in that one if that does take place, if the standings kind of go the way that I feel that they will on Saturday.
All right, well, we'll look at some of those matchups here in a second in terms of the conference tournament. Before we get to that, we've got to get through Saturday. There are several games. There's 7 of them. Now, there are 2 teams that will not make the Conference USA Conference Tournament. Only the top 12 of the 14-team league get in. North Texas and FIU, their seasons will end on Saturday. In terms of the matchups that those 2 teams have, North Texas on the road at Marshall, FIU on the road at UAB, are those both fade teams for you in your mind? I mean, have they just packed it in for the year?
I think so. You saw FIU last night kind of come at Middle Tennessee early in the game. I think they jumped out to like a 19-5 lead. Middle Tennessee only won by 3. I'm pretty sure they may have been double-digit favorites on that one. I didn't get a chance to look. But I think that was more of a product of Middle Tennessee kind of not showing up. But FIU at UAB with their length, with their ability. And then right now UAB is kind of playing pissed off in a sense. So I would think that UAB would almost be a lock. FIU with Anthony Evans, their head coach, I believe he's probably has 1 foot out the door right now. The other half is basically based on the administration. So, yeah, I think that game is definitely – kind of a lock. And North Texas always surprises me. As bad as they've been this year, they still have some firepower with Jamichael Reese. They have two very good freshmen, Ryan Rouldridge, and the other guy's name slips my mind, but he's been a guy that's I think it's three straight weeks he's been a Conference USA Player of the Week, and the guy I'm mentioning is actually A.J. Lawson, their 6'5 guard. So they're a little bit more capable than FIU, even though FIU has some firepower as well. But I would think that that Marshall-North Texas game would probably be a little bit closer than FIU-UAB. UAB took care of business right now. The way that they played against Middle Tennessee last Sunday, I think that's indicative of what this UAB team is defensively and just being able to create buckets offensively. So I think UAB would definitely be a lock. Depending on that Marshall-North Texas spread, I'd be kind of weary on that one. But again, North Texas is definitely – Tony Benford's definitely out. I've heard from sources that, you know, all year long, you know, they've been kind of looking at – they've already been preparing, to get Tony Benford out of there. So that one, it's going to be interesting. That game has a little bit more parameters in terms of things where North Texas could, you know, be fighting for their head coach or just be fighting for pride. But definitely, if you're looking in between those games, I think UAB is way more of the lock depending on the spread on that one.
Now, there are a couple of teams here that really have nothing to play for this weekend because they can't change seeds. The first one plays early. That's Louisiana Tech. They play at 2 o'clock. They'll host Southern Miss. But, you know, we do have senior day things, and teams want to go into the conference tournament with a little bit of momentum. Louisiana Tech should be a pretty big favorite in that game on Saturday. Do you think that they're able to cover, you know, what should probably be a double-digit number?
Yeah, KenPom has them as a 19-point favorite. Sometimes it comes close. And you know, really, as scrappy as Southern Miss has played, they haven't played well last week on the Florida swing. A swing usually that you can kind of, you know, definitely dictate. You know, they got beat by 12 by Florida Atlantic, but they took Rice to overtime last week. And they're another one of those teams that's kind of a game plan team. But Louisiana Tech has the player of the year in Eric McCree, in my opinion, on their squad. They're really, really starting to get going. I mean, this is a team, they dropped a really heartbreaking loss to Rice last weekend. But before that, I mean, this is a team that had won about seven in a row. So I think you can really, really count on a La Tech being able to hold on to that double-digit favorite, which they're probably going to be in. They play well at home. I think I know they have a ridiculous home record in Conference USA since they've been there. And like I said, Southern Miss is kind of hit or miss. They're without Kahari Price. Clinton Campbell's been a big key for them, but they just don't have enough firepower to be able to trim. If they're a 14-point dog, I don't think they have that firepower in the last 2 minutes to make anything backdoor-ish, because La Tech is really playing on a different level right now. And really right behind Middle Tennessee, Louisiana Tech can really stat 1B in terms of the class of the Conference USA.
So Middle Tennessee, as you mentioned, they really struggled with Florida International at home last night. They were actually an 18-point favorite in that game. So they didn't come anywhere close to covering that number, really weren't outside the number at all at any point. What do they do with Saturday's game? I mean, this is a team that, and we'll talk about this in a second, does have a little bit of a resume to be an at-large team if they don't win this conference tournament. Is this a bounce back spot for them where they look to blow out a team that, you know, realistically they should blow out?
Yeah, I think knowing Kermit Davis and kind of, I don't want to say being around him, but being able to talk to him, and kind of, he's a Tim Floyd disciple. I think I mentioned that before on here. And I think definitely that you'll see a different change, maybe a different attitude from this team. You know, looking at the box score early when they were down, my question on my podcast, my Conference USA podcaster this week, was how does Kermit handle these 2 days? You know, you can rest your guys, but you're not going to play until probably late or mid next Thursday afternoon. So I figured that Kermit would want to give his guys, you know, definitely some minutes, and that seems like what they got last night. But I think in terms of energy and effort, that's definitely going to be wrapped up. You got Kenny Potts played 35 minutes last night. Ja'Cory Williams played 33 minutes. Reggie Upshaw played 32 minutes. So that tells me their starting five were into that game. Obviously, it was close. So you'll definitely see, I think, just a different attitude from this Blue Raider team against FIU. FIU can fill it up from deep. That's really, really FAU's strength. And with Middle Tennessee's 131 defense, sometimes you can poke holes in it. But I really, really think Kermit Davis is going to get his guys into tournament mode, I think they'll really, really put it on FAU. And, you know, you're sending out some great seniors there. Reggie Upshaw is going to be leaving. Ja'Cory Williams is a one-year senior, but a guy that's made a big impact for them. I think the emotions led to what should be a pretty intense practice today or shoot around. I think you'll see Middle Tennessee bounce back and cover possibly a double-digit spread to kind of stake their claim. Like, look, we're in this thing. We ran Conference USA all year. Don't look at Thursday. Let's see what happens next week. And I think you'll see the Middle Tennessee State team that everybody's come to grown kind of close to and putting them into that bubble bracket spot.
So with Old Dominion here, and you were watching this game very closely yesterday against UTEP, Old Dominion's got that UTEP-UTSA back-to-back swing. And as we talked about, it's a pretty challenging thing to do, especially with a team like Old Dominion that's so far away from home. You play in the altitude the first night. Now you're going to go to San Antonio on Saturday afternoon with a 4 o'clock Eastern tip, so that'd be 3 o'clock local time. It's a pretty quick turnaround for the Monarchs, who have nothing to play for in this spot. Are they on upset alert here?
I would think so, but, you know, for one thing, in terms of the travel, they did charter out here to El Paso, which makes it so much easier on this road trip. You know, the plane may be a little bit smaller for some of their 6'7", 6'8", guys, but, you know, you don't have to wait in an airport. You don't have to catch a flight to Dallas, then to San Antonio. So that's kind of an advantage they have. And then plus, looking at what happened in UTSA last night, you know, they got beat by a John Davis buzzer beater. And, you know, they've really kind of been on the fringe. You know, this is a team, the UTSA, that's really had some tremendous, tremendous coaching by Steve Henson, because honestly, I mean, their talent level is that of probably a Division II school. And I hate to talk about kids like that, but it's really the truth. And Steve Henson's done a tremendous job. And they kind of come and go as Jeff Beverly goes. And with Old Dominion's personnel, which I was very, very impressed last night, B.J. Stith, a 6'5", 210-pounder, Zoran Talley, 6'7", 200-pounder, Brandon Stith, a 6'7", 250 guy. You know, they can really match up with Jeff Beverly and really give UTSA some problems offensively. So I think this is a very low-scoring game. I'm really, really interested to see what the under is going to be on this one. That may be the play there for a lot of you folks out there. And I really, really think that Old Dominion's defense is going to just clamp down on a UTSA team that's really, really struggled all year shooting the basketball. And I think that's going to be a factor. And I don't think it'll be a big time blow. I could see a double digit win by Old Dominion, but like I said, that under could be a ticket to a nice little parlay or a nice, you know, straight bet on this one. That's really the play, I think, when you look at this Old Dominion UTSA game.
One other game I want to look at here for Saturday, Charlotte and UTEP. This one, 3 o'clock Eastern time, so an early one. Quick turnaround for UTEP, quick turnaround for Charlotte too, who had a win at the buzzer, as you said. So both of these teams kind of in different spots heading into Saturday's game. Of course, UTEP has a lot to play for here in this spot. Are they going to be able to take care of business?
I think so. It's going to be a battle. You know, this is really, really going to be a battle. I think whoever can control the tempo in this one will be able to control their lead. And, you know, Charlotte is one of the highest adjusted tempos in the conference, and that's kind of going to be their game. Will UTEP be able to muck it up with their point zone that they run is going to be the question. You know, UTEP's done a tremendous job of being able to match guard for guard with their two guards. So John Davis and Adrian White are going to be the two guards UTEP will slow down, and UTEP's done a tremendous job of that. And I think if they can make Charlotte play left-handed, which they've done to everybody in this past 14-game stretch where UTEP's gone 11-3, and they've kind of been the darlings against the spread, I guess you can say, in their past 15 games, UTEP is going to have a chance. UTEP's really developed an identity to defend, and Charlotte has the identity of, you know, letting John Davis and letting Adrian White control the pace, you know, with either penetration or three-point shots, and that's going to be the key, and UTEP's done a great job of stopping that. So I think if UTEP's defense is up to the challenge, you know, UTEP is a team now where they can shoot 40-35% and be able to squeak it out. That's another game I'm interested to kind of see what that over-under will be, because, you know, like I said, it's going to be about tempo, which team can dictate tempo, but, you know, in terms of a final score and outcome, this is going to be a really, really tough game. And UTEP, they're going to be tested, and you know, they're going to be tested mentally, and they're going to be tested of how they can bounce back, you know, and play a meaningful game after what happened Thursday, where they basically got the game kind of ripped away from them. You know, they celebrated. You know, it was really emotional in the locker room after the game that I felt. And I think these guys, you know, they develop leadership in terms of being able to bounce back. But Charlotte's firepower really, really kind of concerns me in terms of this game just being another barn burner coming down to the last couple of minutes.
And we'll have to see what happens in this one, because if UTEP falters, Rice can take that four seed. So that's something you want to be vigilant of on Saturday in terms of looking at the card, looking at where lines are going. Because if UTEP goes down, we'll probably see a little bit of Rice steam come in, because they have a little bit more to play for. If UTEP wins, Rice doesn't necessarily have as much to play for. So that's something you'll want to be monitoring here on Saturday. Let's head over to Birmingham here and look at this conference tournament. This at Legacy Arena. This is not where UAB plays its home games, but obviously it is in UAB's backyard. The biggest story for me, I think, heading into this conference tournament is Middle Tennessee State. Obviously, they can remove all doubt if they win this thing. If they don't win this thing, let's say maybe they make it to the championship game but lose to Louisiana Tech or Old Dominion, something like that. Do they get in? Are they in at large?
You know, in my personal opinion, hell yes. You know, compared to what you're looking at, who else is on the bubble? I was reading this week a double-digit loss team like Ole Miss, who Middle Tennessee just kind of bent them over earlier in the out-of-conference. And really, my personal opinion is yes, but when you look at Conference USA's recent history with Louisiana Tech, 29 wins, snubbed to the NIT, 2 years or a year before that, Southern Miss with Donnie Tindall, 28 wins, snubbed. Louisiana Tech, I think a couple of years ago, had 25, 26 wins, if I'm not mistaken, NIT. So it's really, really a fine line. And now nobody really has had kind of the resume or RPI where Middle Tennessee City, mid-30s, have good wins against a team like Ole Miss, like I mentioned earlier. You know, they kind of scheduled regionally where they had teams like Georgia State, who they did lose to, Virginia Commonwealth, who they lost to, but they played Southern Alabama, they played Mississippi, like I mentioned, and you know, those. That something talking with people that I've had on my podcast and their win against Murray State to open up the season, those wins could possibly, or those games could possibly weigh in the selection committee. But you know, I'm just kind of going off of history and saying, you know, it's almost 50-50 to see whether a 28 win Middle Tennessee State team that loses in the final goes in, because like I mentioned, you had a really good Southern Miss team a couple years ago, went 29 games, lost in the semifinals to Tulsa or Louisiana Tech, and they got shafted, you know what I mean? And the next year, same thing with Louisiana Tech, a 29-win team, very talented, Speedy Smith, Alex Hamilton, Raheem Appleby, talented team, got snubbed. So, you know, Conference USA, you know, they're ranked about in the 20th from any RPI collective or the KenPom. So it's really almost 50-50, and it's a big case. I saw SI did a great piece on how mid-majors should be able to get waived even more, or, you know, be considered. And I think Middle Tennessee could push that notion this March. But, I mean, the end-all, I think, for Kermit Davis and his club is just let's win. Let's go out there and let's get ourselves set up not only to win the conference tournament, but have some momentum going in for the NCAA tournament. I think they have that talent where their mindset is kind of above, you know, we're on the bubble. Let's just win three games at Birmingham and get in.
It's going to be really interesting to see. I mean, realistically speaking, they should have two wins over conference tournament champions if UNC Wilmington and Belmont take care of business in the Colonial and the OVC respectively. You mentioned that win on the road at Ole Miss. It's very impressive. They blew out Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's not a great team, obviously, but I mean, still, it is a major conference team here in college basketball. So, you know, obviously for the Blue Raiders, the goal is to win this conference tournament. They'll be favored to do so, and if they do that, then, you know, it's a moot point anyway. But who else do you like here in this field? I mean, if Middle Tennessee State's not going to win this thing, who would you put second in terms of the odds to win?
Right now, I definitely think La Tech, just because they have the player of the year. They have a really, really good freshman point guard that can is kind of the straw that stirs their drink. And then they have a shot blocker on the back end. So that's definitely a team, you know, that's going to watch out for in terms of just having the talent to be able to just wear you down with their talent. You know, they're a really good three-point shooting team. This is a team that UTEP had a double-digit lead at home second half. They hit five threes in a row, does Louisiana Tech, and they're right back in the game just based off their personnel and talent alone. So that's a scary team. You know, I think Louisiana Tech early on in the year had some losses that kind of made you scratch your head and out of conference, you know, particularly that South Carolina game. I think you flip that one around. You know, they take Cal to overtime. You're possibly talking about, and they also lost to Florida Gulf Coast by a point. game. You take those losses away, and this Louisiana Tech team could possibly argue for an at-large bid themselves. Maybe I may be thinking kind of crazy there, but you know, that's a talented team. Also, Old Dominion, I was really, really impressed with their length, with their physicality. There's some teams in Conference USA that can't match that physicality, and that is going to be kind of Old Dominion's key. And then you have Rice with two of the most talented guards in the league, and Igor Kulichov and Marcus Evans. So you're looking at those four teams that I really think outside of Middle Tennessee can make runs and can really challenge Middle Tennessee in that championship game or in the semifinal. But if I had to give you a solid number two, Louisiana Tech, hands down, Eric McCree, and also their head coach, Eric Congo, has done a tremendous job. This was a Louisiana Tech team that was picked to finish seventh in the preseason, which was absurd to me. Their talent and what they've done recruiting-wise, I mean, they're going to be a top five team in this conference the next 2 or 3 years, and they proved it once again this year, sitting at 21-9. And like we mentioned earlier, they should take care of business against Southern Miss and go into the conference tournament with some very, very high confidence of a two seed.
So I want to ask you about this, because in looking at the scheduling for this tournament, this is kind of quirky to me, where Middle Tennessee would play the winner of the 8-9 game Thursday night, 6 o'clock Central Time. They win that game, which of course they should. They have to come back and play at 2 o'clock Central Time on Friday. That's a really quick turnaround. And of course it's even quicker for the 4-5 winner. I'm looking at this on Wikipedia. So, you know, if the scheduling is wrong, please make sure that you tell me. But, man, that's a really, really rapid turnaround for those two teams that play late Thursday night.
Yeah, and it's kind of been like that. I remember the UTEP was kind of in that situation a couple of years ago. And you know, the Conference USA Twitter was kind of going at each other earlier in the week when it was announced that UAB was able to pick their time slot for attendance purposes. And that's kind of why they kind of do that in a sense. And it is, you know, but I think if you ask a coach, you know, guy like Tim Floyd, guy like Jeff Jones I spoke to last night, guy like Kermit Davis, Doc Savage, those guys say, we're just going to go out there and play, you know. And I think at this time of the year, you know, your gamers, your Middle Tennessee State that's kind of been here before, you just want to play. You know, you should – the Alpha Dogs kind of raise up in March, and I think that could be a factor for some of these teams, some of these top dog teams. So I don't think it's going to be that big of a factor, let's say, compared to maybe a Florida Atlantic, even a Charlotte, a team that maybe hasn't been in that situation, hasn't played at that high level, I would think. But your Louisiana Techs, your Middle Tennessees, even your Old Dominions, I think will be able to handle that. But it is definitely a tough turnaround, especially some of the emotional games I think we're going to see in Birmingham. You know, you always hear that term of teams beating up on each other in Conference USA. Well, outside of Middle Tennessee, I mean, that's really kind of been, you know, the theme of Conference USA basketball this year. You know, you had UAB go to FIU and get smacked. You had Louisiana Tech lose at UTSA early in the year. So there's going to be some emotional games. So that getting over an emotional game at 7 o'clock and playing again at 10 or 3 o'clock, like you mentioned, that could kind of be a factor. But from some of those top dog teams, I don't think so. I think that's just going to fuel their fire. But, you know, it would be interesting to see one of these lower-level teams kind of make that run or win on Wednesday, win on Thursday, and then having to play that turnaround on Friday. That will be kind of a factor for some, like I said, a team like Charlotte, team like FAU, if they're able to kind of make a run and make this tournament even more interesting than what it should be.
The one that I was thinking about before you started to go in that direction is whoever the 5 seed is, playing Wednesday night at 8:30, playing the next night at 8:30, and then having to play that 2 o'clock game on Friday if the 5 seed wins the first round in the quarterfinals. And, you know, we'll see if that's Rice or UTEP, but, you know, that's really, really challenging to basically play 3 games in essentially 2.5 days. I mean, that's a lot to ask of somebody. So who would Middle Tennessee State rather see in that 2 o'clock game on Friday with that 4-5, likely the 5 seed beating the 12 seed, of course, who would they rather see with that quick turnaround? I mean, do they have more depth than UTEP, more depth than Rice, more depth than both? Does it matter?
Yeah, I mean, they have more depth than both, but I think they would want to play Rice because UTEP has at least a decent front line in terms of guys that can match up and defend with them, not so much overpower Middle Tennessee, but play at their level and defend. And I think Rice is a team that's very guard-oriented. They don't have much, if at all, in terms of a 6'7", 6'8", banger. And neither does UTEP, but they have a 7-footer. They have a 6'10", guy, that a freshman that's really, really coming around. And I think Kermit doesn't want to see Tim Floyd's changing defenses, you know, in that type of setting. So I think Middle Tennessee is definitely going to be a Rice fan into them. That's a bad matchup for Rice because nobody's going to stop Ja'Cory Williams. Nobody's going to stop Reggie Upshaw for them. Those two should have a field game, which late in the second half should open up their guards and getting pots. So I would think Middle Tennessee were huge, huge Rice fans and huge, huge Charlotte fans, you know, to be able to get that upper hand, you know, to have a Rice team in on that Friday.
All right, let me ask you about this. Let's talk a little bit about Legacy Arena here, where this tournament's going to be held, also the city of Birmingham. UAB is obviously taking a few steps back here. So in terms of the crowd, you know, with its proximity to the campus, it should be a pretty pro Blazers event. But what do you think about the crowd for this? I mean, it's not like the major conference tournaments where you have really large, you know, swaths of alumni all over the place, boosters that are going to travel to places like DC for the Big Ten tournament, or, you know, Brooklyn for the ACC, or, you know, Vegas for the Pac-12. You don't get that here in Conference USA. So what do you think the atmosphere is going to be like?
You know, it's going to be akin to like an exempt preseason tournament. You know what I mean? I really think so. You know, when UAB doesn't play, you know, obviously Conference USA is trying to attract some sort of a fandom, I guess you could say. You know, by allowing UAB to pick their time slot whatever seed they fall in on a Wednesday. And I don't know if that's the same thing on Thursday, whether they get to pick. I doubt it, because those times are kind of set already in terms of Thursday, Friday. So, you know, I really, really put it to just looking at what UAB, what they've drawn the past couple of years. And it's really, really equivalent to, you know, the cable car classic or whatever out of conference tournament, exempt ESPN tournament you want to say, where, you know, you have maybe one fan base that's really, really going to travel, and you'll have your parents and your other people that are going to travel, you know, with certain teams. But yeah, I don't think that you'll see, you know, huge crowds, or, you know, you'll see, like I mentioned, families, you'll see, you know, your diehards, your key boosters, your key people that travel everywhere and have the money to be able to up and go to Birmingham, you know, from El Paso, from Norfolk, from Miami, those kind of far away places, I guess you could say, from Birmingham. So I really think that the crowd is going to be poor, but that does not discredit what UAB's done in terms of how well they've treated folks over there and the setup. I mean, that's a really nice, that's almost an NBA style arena that you're playing in. It's just kind of unfortunate that, you know, you can't fill it up to make it look nice and sexy on TV. So, you know, I think the attendance is definitely going to hurt. And, you know, I've heard a couple people, you know, through the source wire talking about, you know, moving into the Cowboys facility in Frisco, and, you know, having kind of that intimate setting in the practice facility, which hosts high school games. And it's a really, really nice facility. And I think that should be even though that's a small time kind of Bush League kind of move in a sense on the national scale, Conference USA to make that fan attraction, I guess you could say, or have fans be a factor in a conference tournament, that may be the direction they go. But in terms of Birmingham, I think you'll definitely see weak crowds when UAB doesn't take the floor.
Now, I don't know if you've been out there before to cover this tournament or if you've been to Legacy Arena, but obviously you've watched a lot of this tournament here over the last several years. What can we expect in terms of a shooting backdrop? Is this a place where guys like to shoot? Is there good lighting? Does it seem like, you know, there's an adjustment period? What would you expect in terms of, you know, offensive efficiency here?
That's a good question. It seems like it's kind of dark background. You know, it seems like when looking at it last year, fans were seated on, you know, kind of the sidelines, you know what I mean? There was nobody really behind the baskets, and it is kind of a bigger backdrop. Like I said, it's almost equivalent to an NBA arena in terms of the size and the seating. I think it's 18,000 or 15,000. You guys could correct me, look that up on your own, but it is a bigger arena. And I want to say that I read a quote somewhere from somebody a couple years ago where they mentioned the darkness and kind of that deep background. You know, there's kind of depth behind it when you see just a bunch of empty seats and, you know, dark shades. And, you know, if you look at some of the pictures from the Conference USA tournament over the past couple of years too, you know, it is kind of that dark background. It's not like how the Lakers do it or how the Rockets do it, where they kind of, you know, the upper levels are kind of shaded. It's just kind of the lighting in there. So I think for some teams it could be a problem just because, like I mentioned, there's a lot of depth behind it with the dark, empty seats. You know, and you saw a team like UTEP kind of struggle shoot shooting from three. I think last year it was, and UTEP was a pretty good 3-point shooting team last year, and that was kind of their fault when they played, Middle Tennessee. They're just unable to hit three. So I think it does make a factor, especially when you got a team like UTSA who plays it in really a high school gym with walls behind on the baseline. You know, you get kind of thrown into that setting. It could make a difference. FAU, FIU kind of in that same mold, even though FIU's out of it. But, you know, you kind of get what I'm saying, where teams are used to their backgrounds and not having to go into this NBA-style arena. I think it could be a factor for some teams.
Yeah, it seats about 17,600, so you're right on the money there with that first guess that you had. Are you going out there to cover it this year?
Nah, unfortunately, no. My little sister is graduating in the summer, so I'm saving up to give her a nice little going-away graduation gift for her.
Attaboy. Good for you, man. That's great to hear. Congratulations to your little sister there as well. But Alex Nicholas of Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. I assume you're going to be covering this tournament, aren't you?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll definitely be covering it. We're actually going to have a Conference USA podcast that I host on Blog Talk on Monday with my buddy Dave West. He's actually going to be there covering it. He runs a UAB blog, The Daily Dragon, and we're going to have definitely going to blow out Conference USA coverage. Listen to that show on Monday. We should have some good betting tips for you. Once the seeding's out, we'll be able to break down, give some predictions, and really, really dig into what could be a very, very entertaining Conference USA tournament next week. And you'll also see me on Twitter tweeting away, too. So should be fun. One of the best times of the year, man.
And what are those Twitter handles again, Alex?
It's at SBN Minor Rush. That's where you can find our Minor Rush Twitter. And then I'm at NicholasAlex915 on Twitter.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it. Enjoy this Conference USA tournament. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks for having me, Adam. Always a pleasure, man. Have a good one.
Great stuff there from Alex Nicholas of Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. Of course, no odds out for this tournament as of yet because only three of the seed lines have been determined. Middle Tennessee, La Tech, Old Dominion, 1-2-3. UTEP should be the four if they beat Charlotte, and then Rice would be the five, and then we kind of go on down from there. But, you know, good to get some in-depth analysis here on one of these upcoming conference tournaments. And, of course, I will have a preview of this one, as well as all of the conference tournaments that tip off next week over at bangthebook.com. For example, I wrote up the MEAC this morning. I'm sure everyone's very invested in the MEAC conference tournament, but I've been writing up all of them. I'll continue to do that, including the major conferences here. We do have some odds out for those, but, of course, I wait until the seeding lines have been determined. Really the only way that you can attack a tournament like that. Although that being said, when I did look out there and see Maryland about 10-1 yesterday, that's one that we've kind of talked about a little bit here on the show, because Maryland, with that fan base close to D.C., should give them a little bit of a home court advantage there in the Big Ten Conference Tournament for this year. So that may be something you want to look into. And, of course, there will be some hedging opportunity there as well, probably with a team that starts out with a 10-1 pre-tournament price. Whew. All right. Well, let's talk about a lot of different things here to wrap up this week of Bang the Book Radio. I got about 27 minutes. I'm going to use all of them to talk MLB, NHL, look at some NBA situational stuff, also answer a college basketball listener question, an MLB listener question. We got all kinds of stuff going on here. Before I get into all that, just want to remind our listeners, as we head into this big final weekend of the regular season for college basketball, as we look at MLB season win totals, conference tournament futures, all these types of things, you want to be able to shop around for the best price. It is imperative. It is something you absolutely have to be able to do. It's going to help you in the long run. I promise you that. If you don't have an account over at DSI Sportsbook, you can head on over there. Use the promo code BTBRadio. They'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up. And then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. The other option, the Bang200 promo code, 100% for the sportsbook, 100% for the live casino. Two great options over there. They're going to be on top of things here with conference tournaments. Of course, you know, you got to be careful here because, as we talked about yesterday with Ralph Michaels, you've got these teams playing back-to-back. Lines come out a little bit later. You know, so lots of things to pay attention to here at this time of the year. If you miss a move at one book, you want to try and catch it at another before it does move. So, you know, that's the importance of having multiple outs to shop around, and that's something I think everyone needs to try and take advantage of here. I had a listener question from one of our buddies, Zach, on Twitter earlier this week here, asking about, you know, when you know whether or not you're onto something. Talked about, you know, his personal system of power ratings and stats that he's using. you know, about 56% here over the last couple of months, said somewhere in the realm of, you know, 100 to 150 plays, and asked if, you know that you're onto something at that point. And I'm going to say this. I'm a big believer in sample size, obviously. We talk on this show all the time about how sports handicapping is a long-term investment. You know, you're not going to get rich quick. You're going to have variance. It's going to be up and down. It's just going to happen. You know, that's why the best in the world shoot for 54, 55, 56%, because sometimes you may have a great handicap and it still loses. Other times you may have a bad handicap, you get a little bit lucky and it winds up cashing for you. In terms of knowing when you've got something, there are a couple of things. For one thing, and this is something that Sports Cheetah talks about on this show, and I'll try to get some thoughts on this again next week when we're talking, but I think one of the best things to do in terms of seeing if you actually have something is being able to compare your numbers against the opening line and the closing line. And this is something that's very important. You know, I think your percentages can have variance, especially if you're only talking about 100 plays as a sample size. That's really not a whole lot. It's a great start. It's very good to be 56%. You know, go 56 and 44 out of every 100 plays. That's phenomenal. You'd be doing really well. But I think the better gauge, if you've got a system of your own, if you've got something that spits out lines, you know, check them against the openers and the closers. If the majority of your games are opening around the opening number, that's very good. You know, you may not have a whole lot of betting opportunities because you're so close to the opening number, but it means that you're rating these teams around where they should be rated. You know, if you constantly have teams where their games are off by 8, 10, 12 points, somebody is wrong, and it's not the sports books. It's you. So you have to make adjustments. You always have to be tinkering these things, but if you look at the openers and you've got a number that's off by 3-4 points, you make a play on it, you want to see it close closer to the number that you had. So if you've got a number, your number comes out -8, you know, something like that, and the sports books are dealing -4, you want that number to be close to -8 when it closes. You want the market to be on your side. So those are the evaluation methods I think that we need to focus on. Obviously, everybody wants to focus on their bankroll and on their winning percentage. And don't get me wrong, it's good to make money. You want to win your bets, obviously. But if you're a novice and you're just starting out, you know, there's going to be variance. You don't want to start going really heavy because you're 56% over 100 plays. You start increasing your risk of ruin if you start increasing your bet size by too much anyway. That can be a problem for you. So I think if you're working on setting up numbers, whether it's college football, the NFL, the NBA, college basketball, you want to be close to a lot of openers, and you want the games that you play to move the way that your line suggests that they move. That's the biggest thing. I think, you know, and that can be a really tough mental hurdle to get over, because a lot of people want to sit there and say, okay, I'm hitting 60%. This is good. I'm onto something here. You might be, but you also might just be on the right side of variance. So that's why you want to compare against the openers and the closers. That's how you really judge the system that you have, is to see if you're getting line value with regularity, and if you've got a lot of teams rated, you know, in the ballpark that they're supposed to be rated in. Like I said, if you're off by 8, 10, 12 points, you may win some of those games, and that's fantastic. But also, you know, you're going to find yourself repeatedly playing on the same teams over and over and over again. And at some point, that'll probably turn on you. So check those numbers that you're spitting out against the opener, against the closer. If you're moving along with the sharp line movement, that's a very good thing for you. That's how you know that you're really on to something. And another thing about it too is, you know, you never want to get complacent in this industry. When you think you're onto something, something changes. And I've used this example before, and this is something I've kind of lamented with a guy that's become a very good buddy of mine, and at Jimmy Doomhands on Twitter. We were onto something with that NHL bye week. We were absolutely killing it with that bye week. You know, we had that one weekend here that we had, you know, led into with the shows, and it was phenomenal. You know, we were burying everything. We were getting, you know, big money underdogs. We were getting the short favorites, all that type of stuff. Well, it flipped, and it flipped in a hurry. And part of the reason is because it came out that teams were doing so bad on the bye weeks, the media started to notice, coaches started getting questions. You know, hey, Coach Boudreau, all these teams are struggling during the bye week. What do you think you're going to do to, you know, to stem the tide? And then coaches start to be aware of it. Players start to be aware of it. There's more of a focus because, like we talked about, with these bye weeks, guys go out on vacations with their families. You know, they leave town for a few days. It's hard to get back into rhythm. It's really, really challenging. I mean, think about it just in your own personal lives. You know, you get a week off of work, you go on vacation somewhere, maybe you go visit some family, something like that. You get back to work, it's an effing grind. It is challenging. It is hard to get back into that rhythm, to get back into that schedule. Think about it if you're a pro athlete. You become a creature of habit. You're doing the same things day after day after day. You know, you've got practice at the same time. You've got morning skates. You know, you try to eat at the same times. You work out at the same times. Then you go on vacation for a week. And everything gets all screwed up. Your routine is completely gone. It takes time to get back into that. So teams that you know, didn't really take this into account when they hit the bye week, like, oh, hell yeah, we got a break. You know, they went out, had a few cocktails on the beach, didn't work out for a few days, or you know, maybe just kind of ran on the beach, something like that. You know, it all changes for you, you know. And a lot of players early on in the bye weeks weren't really cognizant of that. And then as we got a bigger sample size of teams coming out of the bye, these coaches and players were like, hey, guys, you know, if we don't take care of business on our end during these 5 days off, what's going to happen to us when we come back to the rink? So it's sort of, you know, I'm sure players still went out of town, still did different things, but they probably tried to keep a little bit more of a routine, made sure that they were working out a little bit more, you know, maybe downtime while the kids are at the kiddie pool, you know, sitting there on the iPad watching some film, something like that, just to stay focused, just to stay in that mindset. And as we've seen now, teams have played a lot better coming out of the bye week. You know, it had been to the point where first periods were a great play to play against those teams, also full games, kind of flipped a little bit. So when you start to think you've got something and it changes, it can be really devastating. So you always have to be tinkering, always have to be adjusting. And that's why, you know, even the guys that do this year after year and have success, we'll take Brad Powers, for example, a guy that, I mean, he's already doing more college football work than anybody else in the handicapping industry. He's been very good at college football in the past, but I guarantee there are adjustments that he's making. There are things that he's changing. You can never be too content when it comes to handicapping. And that's what makes it such a hard thing to do, especially for people that have full-time jobs, families, kids, all of this. You know, it's so hard to dedicate that number of hours to pay attention to all these things. It's very, very challenging. And like I said, when you think you've got something, you're probably on the verge of missing something else that's happening. So, yes, if you've got some sort of system where you're spitting out lines and you're getting good results, that's fantastic. That's awesome. You're building up a bankroll, which is good because you're giving yourself a margin for error. One of the biggest problems that people face is that they start a bankroll. They think they've got something. They don't know what they're doing. They're not mindful of betting proper unit sizes. All of a sudden, they're depositing again right away. You know, if you're keeping a responsible bankroll, you have success at the outset, then you've built yourself in a little bit of a cushion, and that's great. You know, because then you can keep adjusting, keep learning, you know, following proper bankroll management techniques with a little bit more money in your bankroll. These are all good things. They're all part of the learning curve, and it's nice to have success out of the gate, but you know, you want to make sure that you're doing the right things to set yourself up for long-term success rather than enjoying short-term variance. So I wound up following Zach, talked with him a little bit more about this via DM because it's just easier to do it more than 140 characters at a time. But I thought it was a really good question to bring up here on the show because you know this probably happens to a lot of our listeners out there where they start setting their own numbers, they start setting power ratings for these teams, they have success with these things, maybe they go overboard with their bet sizes, all of a sudden they're redepositing again. You know, so you want to be checking against the openers and the closers. I think that is the best measure of how effective your system, for lack of a better term, is. I don't think it's the win percentage because you're not talking about a large enough sample size of games. You want to be comparing against what the odds makers are doing and then what the bookmakers are doing to adjust to action that's going on in the market. So that would be my tip with that. And you know, if anyone else has any questions about that, please feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripods, or you can reach out to the official at Bang the Book Twitter account. Had one more listener question. It actually comes from Jimmy Doomans, and no, he didn't do this because he felt sorry for me. He was wondering here about Major League Baseball handicapping, and if it gets easier to handicap as we go along. Because one of the things that we've noticed here, and there's one very, very good syndicate that's out there, Right Angle Sports, that for the longest time, I think they've changed this policy now, they would only play college basketball for about the first half of the season, and then they would shut it down. The reason being because they felt like their edges were getting smaller as the numbers got tighter. So the question from Jimmy is that, you know, when it comes to baseball, do I find the same to be true where lines, you know, get tighter to the point where you just don't have a whole lot of value? And it's kind of a loaded question because, for one thing, I think betting baseball in September is remarkably difficult to do. You have teams with very different motivation levels. You have roster expansion with guys from the 40-man now eligible to come up and play. It changes a lot of the dynamics. You know, you get situations where maybe managers are using their fourth or fifth best reliever in a high leverage situation because they want to see if said player can handle that in the future. You know, maybe they have an impending free agent out there as a setup guy. They want to see, hey, can this in-house guy do the job? Do we need to think about extending our impending free agent? Do we have to go in the free agent market and buy somebody else? So you get that in September. But for me, when it comes to baseball, the best months for me are May, June, July. August can be a pretty good one too. But what starts to happen is that you notice these tendencies. And because I handicap, my regression analysis handicapping style for baseball relies heavily on the advanced metrics. The advanced metrics, almost all of them require sample sizes that are significant enough to be believed. There are some things out there, and I can post these on Twitter if anyone's interested in them. There's an article I have in my bookmarks from FanGraphs about stabilization points for certain statistics. Some of these statistics, you need 300, 400, 500 plate appearances before they actually mean something. Some of them don't even stabilize over the course of an entire season. But you can get some of these numbers once you start to get a sample size. And really, it's because when you talk about baseball, let's take a pitcher, for example. Let's say a pitcher gives up, you know, two or three earned runs per start over his first 9 or 10 starts. But he's got one start where he gave up 8 runs. Well, his ERA is going to be well up over 4 by a large margin, probably even closer to 5. And it's really one start that stands out. You know, when you talk about pitchers making 32, 33 starts a year, some of those outliers can be really, really damaging even deep into the season. Take a look at hitters, for example. It's all relative. You know, if a guy starts 2 for 23, then it takes him 3 weeks to get out of it. If a guy goes 2 for 23 in the middle of the regular season when he's already got 350 or 375 plate appearances, it doesn't mean nearly as much. It's not going to hurt his numbers as much as it would if it's at the start of the year. So it's kind of one of those things about perception. You know, I mean, pitchers and hitters are going to struggle throughout the year. If they struggle early on, it looks really bad. If they struggle in the middle of the year, nobody really notices. And if it's at the end of the year, barely moves the numbers at all. So I think sample sizes are really, really important in baseball. For me, sample sizes are more important in baseball than in any other sport. In part, that's because I handicap it a lot more closely with the work that I do at bangthebook.com. And also because I'm just interested in the advanced analytics of baseball a lot more than any of the other sports. But I find that with baseball, the middle of the season is the best time to play it. I think a lot of times you have people that say in some of the daily winter sports, you know, early in the season is the best time to play. You try to play on those perception biases that people have. You know, the Lakers suck. Well, yeah, the Lakers do suck, and they're terrible now at this stage of the game. But correct me if I'm wrong, I think they were 10-10 over their first 20 games of the regular season. So perception was, hey, the Lakers are terrible. They are terrible. But at the start of the season, they weren't terrible. So those are the kinds of things that you want to look for early on in the season of Major League Baseball. But then as we get deeper into the season, I think that's where the metrics become really important. You know, for example, a lot of people love to play underdogs in Major League Baseball in the month of April. They will play, not blindly, but they will play those plus 170, plus 180, plus 160 underdogs because everyone's trying to get into the rhythm of the season. Now, in some cases, part of that is because they're playing teams that are really good, teams that went to the playoffs last year, a little bit of a hangover from those teams. You know, good teams have guys playing the World Baseball Classic. Good teams have more big picture perspective. The bad teams are trying to start out well and prove everybody wrong. So you're going to see a lot of line moves on some really shitty really awful teams in the month of April. You know, you're going to see people taking a stab at the Padres, who are probably going to lose 100 games. You're going to see people taking a stab with the Chicago White Sox, who aren't very good. The Minnesota Twins, who I don't think are very good. The Cincinnati Reds, who aren't going to be very good. They're going to play, you know, these big prices because everyone's just kind of getting into the rhythms of the season. And those are things that people like to do in a lot of sports. Then as you get toward the middle of the seasons, the numbers tighten up. Motivation levels are different for everybody. You know, I don't do a whole lot of handicapping of motivation or situational handicapping in baseball the way I do in other sports because I feel like I can rely on the metrics more. When it comes to the NHL, NBA, college basketball, a lot of the things that I look at are situationally based. In baseball, it's not the same way. To be fair, I will look at things like teams going east to west, west to east. Second game is usually worse than the first one, that type of stuff. Those are situational angles to play on. But overall, I rely more on the numbers when it comes to baseball. The numbers need sample sizes to be relevant. So I think baseball gets more value as we go along. And then in September, the value is very difficult to ascertain. And then the playoffs are a total crapshoot in my mind. So I don't really look a whole lot at stuff like that. But to answer the question, I do think that baseball becomes more advantageous later in the season. I think June, July, August are very good. I think late May is also very good. I think late May is extremely good because you start to see some of those numbers that are outliers and people don't pick up on them as fast. So, you know, I think once we get probably about May, maybe a week before Memorial Day, something like that, right on through the end of August, I think those are the best times to bet baseball, and those are the best times where you can see what some of those line moves are going to be, also find ways to get out in front of the market. One other listener question today for the show from @SkatingTripods asking on behalf of a friend, if it's a degenerate move to buy a T-shirt of a team that won a bet for you, my answer to that is absolutely not. No, I don't own a North Florida Ospreys shirt now. But, hey, you know what? I mean, it's a lot of fun, and I'm actually somebody who really enjoys vintage sports apparel. So if I'm out somewhere and I happen to stumble across some random-ass team shirt, I'm buying it. I don't care. I'm buying it. So, no, that's not a degenerate thing to do at all. @SkatingTripods, thank you so much for the question. Let's take a look at some NHL stuff here for this weekend. I think there's a pretty interesting play tonight that I was looking at. That would be the St. Louis Blues as they take on the Winnipeg Jets. This is one of those spots where we've got a team coming out of the bye. The Jets have not played for a while. The Blues have been playing, although they do have 2 days off prior to this game, so they can get situated a little bit. Winnipeg's a really tough barn to play in. I don't think people realize this, but it's a very small arena. Winnipeg got a team a few years ago. They're playing in like a 15,000-seat arena. The fans are right on top of the players. It's a really unique home ice advantage, and Winnipeg, about a 500 team at home this year. They were a little bit better last year. But I do like the St. Louis Blues here in this spot. They've dropped four straight, had 2 days off to figure things out a little bit. I actually thought that they would open a favorite in this game. They didn't. In fact, they opened about plus 105. This number hasn't moved too much yet, but I do think it's going to throughout the day. One of the things I'm kind of trying to focus on a little bit here in the NHL, because we're running out of bye weeks, so we won't have that angle anymore. Also, motivations are starting to change a little bit. But one of the things I started looking at late in the NFL season is I can't back a bad quarterback. It's just so hard to do. I know that those are generally the value sides in the NFL. I mean, people bet on the Browns week after week after week last year. But I'm sort of coming to the same conclusion about goaltenders in the NHL. I have a very hard time backing bad goaltenders. Winnipeg has two of them. I don't think Jake Allen is particularly great for St. Louis, but he's better than the guys that Winnipeg has. And another thing about it, too, is I think one of the challenges with the bye week, and something that maybe I should have focused on a little bit more here, is the impact that it has on goaltenders. If you're a goaltender and you're not seeing shots for 5 days, that's strange to you. You know, you're not out there practicing because the league says you can't practice. You're not seeing pucks. You're not looking through traffic. You're not, you know, playing your angles properly, all this type of stuff. I think that's challenging for a team. I think it's really challenging for a goaltender too. And for Winnipeg to have two bad ones to begin with, I think St. Louis is a play tonight. I do like the Blues in this spot. I think they're at a very reasonable price here, catching a little bit on the plus money side. Like I said, I thought they'd be a fairly small road favorite. I think they may end up closing that way. But that would be a play that I would look at for tonight. One other play that I wrote about today, Toronto and Anaheim. Anaheim's coming off of the bye as well. Some interesting storylines here. Former Toronto goaltender Frederick Anderson, he's facing his former team, although I don't think he's getting the start tonight. I think it's Curtis McIlhenny. Randy Carlyle was the head coach of the Maple Leafs. Now he's with the Ducks. Ducks don't have starting goaltender John Gibson. He's dealing with an upper body injury. So I previewed that game over at bangthebook.com. You can head on over there, take a look at that pick. It's kind of disappointing here this weekend in the NHL because I really didn't see a whole lot that I liked from a situational betting standpoint. In fact, even with the loaded Saturday night slate, there's only one game that I've thrown on the situational card here. That's Tampa Bay. They take on Buffalo. Fourth game in six nights for Tampa Bay. They play the Penguins tonight. That's always a tough thing to do, is come back after playing the Penguins. I mean, you play the reigning Stanley Cup champions. There's a little bit more in a game like that. Then you got to go up to Buffalo, cold and snowy in Western New York. I don't think Tampa Bay would be too much of a fan of that. The Sabres play Pittsburgh on Sunday, so maybe a look-ahead factor for them. But, you know, Buffalo's been a really interesting team here since they came out of the bye, because Robin Leonard all of a sudden has stopped stopping pucks. He struggled a little bit with Arizona last night, was in concussion protocol earlier in the week. That may be one where you want to look towards an overplay. Tampa Bay is not a gifted offensive team by any means, but we could see a few goals in that one. I mean, Robin Leonard has regressed a little bit here. That was coming. This is a guy that was regularly facing 38, 39, 40 shots a game. He was only letting in two goals before the break. There's a little bit of regression to the mean going on there. So maybe Tampa Bay team total over, maybe the over for the game. There could be some opportunities there with that. Sunday, Columbus and New Jersey. An interesting little spot here. The Blue Jackets and Devils, both with a quick turnaround. This is a 5 o'clock Eastern puck drop. Both teams play 7 p.m. on Saturday night. So it's challenging. Fourth game in six nights for Columbus. Third game in four nights for New Jersey. Both teams back-to-backs with travel. That's an interesting little spot there. I'll be curious to see what the number comes out for a game like that. And also Sunday, Carolina at Arizona. These two teams play tonight in Carolina. Carolina's a massive favorite, minus 240. I'll be interested to see what the adjusted price is in Arizona on Sunday with the venue flipping. I think it's a much better spot for Arizona. Carolina's been a very good home team. They've been terrible on the road. They've dropped 24 of 31 on the road this year. That could be a spot where you may get a decent home underdog price there on the Arizona Coyotes. You know, Martin Hansel goes, Shane Doan doesn't go. Maybe they settle back in a little bit now. So there are some opportunities there in the NHL this weekend, but not as many as we're accustomed to. So maybe this is a little bit of me subconsciously limiting my exposure, you know, after the bye week thing kind of went up in flames for us a little bit, but we do have a couple of those angles here tonight. So we'll see if those are able to come through. Check out my NBA situational betting article over there at bangthebook.com as well. Got four games for that here over the weekend. Couple of games tonight as well. One that I was looking at, just to throw you a little bit of a ball here, if you can't go over there and read that. San Antonio takes on New Orleans tonight. San Antonio now up to a 6.5-point favorite. This is interesting because the Pelicans looked pretty good against Detroit the other night. Looked like maybe they had figured things out. But now they take on a well-oiled San Antonio machine, good defensive team. Sort of feels like to me this is one of those games where, you know, New Orleans had that one step forward. Now they'll take two steps back. So tough to lay 6.5 with San Antonio on the road, but that's something I am kind of looking at a little bit here for tonight's card. One other thing over in college basketball, and I'm going to pull up this line right now, see if it's moved on us yet. Akron and Kent State. So this one in the MAC, battle for the wagon wheel. Kent State won the first meeting between these two teams on the road at Akron, broke like a 31 or 32 game home winning streak. For those that don't know, these two programs are serious arch rivals. Their campuses are about 15, 20 minutes apart, depending on traffic. This is a big game for both of these teams. Akron has not played well down the stretch, but they've got a revenge factor here. Also, this game's on ESPN2, so maybe they want to make a pretty good showing there on national TV. Senior day for Kent. Akron would obviously love to ruin senior day for Kent State. I was surprised to see this number come out of Pick'em. I think there's some value on the Zips here in this spot tonight. You know, hopefully this one comes through if you do decide to play it. But you know, that's one of those situational handicapping spots that I'm looking for in college basketball as we get deep into the season here. You know, it's just one of those things where you're always looking for value. You always want to try to find value whenever it's out there. And it certainly feels, to me at least, like there's some opportunity there in that spot looking at the Akron Zips for tonight. I want to mention, I put up my AL Central season win total previews yesterday. Yes, the Cleveland Indians are in there. Yes, I tried to remain as impartial as I possibly could with my favorite team. But you can check those out over at bangthebook.com. I do have some stronger opinions there. I didn't have a whole lot of strong opinions about the American League East. I've got some stronger opinions about the American League Central. In fact, there are probably four teams where I actually like a pretty decent play here. Actually, maybe even all five. I think there are some plays to be made in the American League Central. So if you haven't checked those out over at bangthebook.com yet, please make sure that you do. I will have the American League West coming out tomorrow, and then we'll start with the National League next Monday. National League West, I'm going to go west to east instead of east to west like I did with the AL. So that'll be the way that we go about things for the National League. But I should have all of those posted then by the end of next week. If I get them done early, I'll get off the every other day format and just put them all up for you. But I wanted to make sure I gave myself a little bit of time to keep working on these things while putting up content for you. So the American League Central is up over there at bangthebook.com. Coming up on Monday, we joined by Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com for our Handicapping the Hardwood segment. As I said, shows only Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday for the next 2 weeks. Helps accommodate our guests and our listeners, so hopefully you understand. I apologize for any inconvenience, but we will have some longer shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so that we can try and look ahead sort of to some of the weekend matchups, both in the conference tournaments and in March Madness. Check out all the great stuff over at bangthebook.com. We have tons of great content over there. Follow me on Twitter at Skating Tripods. Follow at bangthebook on Twitter as well. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, smart, safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.